Today's speakers are experts on the topic. We have Phil Krueger, who's the general manager of Chicago-based Harris Equipment, and also Deepak Vital, who is a product marketing manager at Atlas Copco. Phil has a fascinating background. Before he got into compressed air, he was a combat search and rescue medic with two tours of duty overseas. He is an expert in both compressed air and blower and vacuum systems and is very valuable to his clients in the food industry. And when I met him a few years ago, really struck me with his implementation of using ISO quality classes of compressed air and integrating them into the SQF food standards. So I think it's very interesting. He's doing great work. And with that, I'll turn it over to Phil. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. My name is Phil Krueger, and I come to you from Harris Equipment, Chicago, Illinois. And I welcome you to today's webinar, Integrating ISO 8573-1 Compressed Air Quality Classes into SQF Food Safety Certification. This presentation that we're going to go through is a culmination of years of dealing with food companies who come to the table and they've got this looming question of how do we meet a criteria that SQF has kind of put on the table for us. You know, we're either wanting the certification or we are going through the process, and we have looked through the code and it's very vague and we need some help. And so what we do is we help them take a look at the code and help them understand what it means and what may have to be done in order to get there. So today's meeting and today's presentation is to help identify and establish a level of air quality that is suitable for the food processing and food packaging industry using SQF directives and ISO classifications. And today I'm going to be talking from the SQF 11.5.7 edition 7.1, and it's actually going to be the module 11 where we're going to be speaking from specifically. But then we're going to be looking at the ISO 8573-1 classification table. But then we're also going to be using the BCAS code 6. There's some standards in there that I'd like to talk about too. But this is where we're going to be pulling our information from. If you're sitting in this webinar, I'm going to assume that at some point or another someone has mentioned SQF to you. Safe quality foods, and this is what the manual you've probably been handed. It's about 68 to 69 pages, and it is module 11, good manufacturing practices for processing of food products. It's like I said, 68 to 69 pages, but it's very very minuscule as far as what they say about compressed air. There's very little that's said. Next slide, please. So what does SQF say about compressed air? Like I said, it's very little. There's actually only two, what I like to call them, directives. SQF in 11.5.7 says simply that compressed air used in the manufacturing process shall be clean and present no risk to food safety. In 11.5.7.2, it says that compressed air used in the manufacturing process shall be regularly monitored for purity. So in essence, two things, right? So it says clean and present no risk, and two, regularly monitored for purity. Next slide, please. So with those two excerpts from the directive, it used to be very vague. When I started working with food companies specifically regarding the SQF, it was very vague in what those two directives meant as far as being clean and presenting no risk and being monitored regularly for purity. There was no clear, concise picture of what that meant. And so when I was talking to our clients or our customers, an analogy kind of came to mind, and it was in a sense that let's say that I had a car club and my client had a car and they wanted to be part of this car club. And two key elements of being a part of my car club was that the car had to be clean and detailed, and it had to be serviced regularly. And so let's say that you brought your car to me and you said, you know, my car is detailed and I have it serviced once a year, and I tell you, well, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. Take it back and have your car cleaned and make sure that it's serviced and monitored regularly. So you go back and you know, without knowing, you do whatever you think is right, and you come back to me and I tell you, nope, I'm sorry, it doesn't pass. Eventually, going through this process over and over again, the logical questions, which I was faced with a lot of, is, you know, please tell us what does clean look like, and as far as service, how regularly is regular enough to meet the requirements to get in your car club? And that's kind of where we're at now with this certification and the understanding of SQF is what does it mean to have a clean and air that doesn't present a risk, but then also what does it mean to regularly monitor for purity? So up until just recently, the SQF code was very vague, but in 2013, the SQF code, which is what I'm pulling from, they expanded, and it's actually been a lot more helpful. It's still very vague, but it's a lot more helpful. They come out and they actually give us some prompting with regards to filtration and with regards to testing. They give us a kind of I don't want to call it a standard, but a directive of a rating for microns with efficiency, but then also that testing must be conducted once a year. Again, this is a good start, but it's just that. It's just a good start. It doesn't help us get where we need to go. Next slide. So SQF is a company that will come out, and they want to see what kind of safe quality standards you're putting into practice to better serve your customer and to serve the industry as far as how you are taking the steps to protect your customer in the industry. And what SQF does is they ask you very clearly to do what you say what you do, and to prove it. However, they don't tell you what you need to say, and they don't tell you what you need to do, and they really don't give you a solid understanding of what it takes to prove it. So what we do is we take a look at some standards that help us define maybe what a standard is that you want for your particular customer, or your particular company. So SQF doesn't offer any quantifiable standards that you can set your standard to. As a matter of fact, the level of quality is very vague, and it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. So this is where I brought over the ISO classification table, because it actually gives us quantifiable standards, and it allows us to assign a value and classification to air systems. So let's take a look at the ISO classification table. So what we're looking at here is a classification table that's what it does is it helps us to assign a class of quality of air to an air system. Now this chart, as you can see, is broken up into there's three actual columns here, and those the segments of a compressed air system. So we're looking at in what looks like a brown column, that's your solid particulates, and the blue column is your water, and in your black column is your oil. So when we're looking at an air system and the quality of the air system, we look at primarily how the air is treated to protect and to provide the quality of air that is necessary. And in doing so, we use this chart to determine what each component rates according to this chart. And according to that chart on the very left-hand side, we assign it a classification. So, for instance, if you were to have a particulate filter that is rated at, we'll say, less than or equal to 10 parts at 1 to 5 micron, that filter would be rated as a class 1 filter. If you guys can see that, if you just look over in the column where it's 1 to 5 microns and scroll down a little bit and take a look where it says less than or equal to 10 parts, you would see that corresponds to the class 1 in the left column. And then moving over to the next part of the air system is your drying system, which we'd like to see remove or suppress water to a certain pressure dew point. We would rate your drying apparatus, and so if it were a refrigerated air dryer that published performance would be a 38 degree pressure dew point, that would put us roughly at about a 5. Because the 37.4 is less than 38, it puts us in between greater than or equal to the 44.6 degree. And then if you go over to the next column over, you would see that that's our oil, total oil and aerosol liquid and vapor, and that's milligrams per cubic meter. If we had a coalescing filter, 0.01, then that would give us a classification of 1. So the overall rating for a system like what I just described would be a rating of an ISO 8573, 151. That would be 1.5.1, and that's what the system would look like. Next slide. So where do we start? After given this information, and now you've got this chart from ISO, what we would do is we would take this chart and we would go to your system, and we would want to identify and inventory your compressed air system as a whole. So we would take a look at your equipment, your compressed air system from the point of compression, which would be either a rotary screw style compressor, it could be a centrifugal style compressor, it could be a reciprocating style compressor, a rotary scroll, a rotary vane. There's many types of compressors, but we would want to take a look at what kind of compressor you have. We'd also want to inventory and identify the compressed air treatment that you've got. There's many different types of dryers, and the performance of the dryers definitely do differ from your deliquescent dryers, your desiccant dryers, your refrigeration dryers. There's many different styles of dryers, and each style of dryer provides and offers a different classification and therefore a different quality of air that's necessary depending on the quality of air that you are trying to meet. Then also the next thing that we want to identify in inventory is your compressed air and sampling program. Do you do sampling and testing? Is that a practice that's currently in place? And if so, how often is it done? Next, we want to look at your compressed air maintenance program. This is so vital when it comes to the quality of air in a plant. The maintenance of your air system directly affects the quality of air that you have flowing onto and into, into your air system and onto your product. And then last but not least, documentation. Like I said, in the very beginning of an SQF module or SQF manual, they very clearly state that they want to make sure that you do what you say what you do, but ultimately the last segment of that is to prove it. And in our industry, documentation is key when we're trying to prove something. We want to make sure that we can substantiate a finding or we can substantiate a statement with documentation that it exists. Next slide. So once you've preliminary profiled your compressed air system, now it's time to establish what you as an organization are looking for as far as a suitable level of quality for your process and your application. Each individual company and organization is going to have their own white paper discussion for the importance or the necessity of having quality of air. But then at that point, it's for you to determine what does your quality of air look like. And by using the ISO chart that I showed you, taking an inventory of your machines and your system, you can kind of identify and profile your system to give you maybe what your system looks like now, and then it's up to you to determine what it is that you want your system to look like as you move forward. So let's take a look at an example of what I'm talking about, a culmination of using the chart, using the identification. So company A has an oil-flooded rotary screw with food-grade lubrication. They've got an inline particulate filter with the 1 to 5 micron equal to or less than 10 parts per million. They've got a standard refrigerated air dryer. That's got a 38-degree pressure dew point. Now, I've got here in parentheses that it, if performing as published, and that's something that's very key to understanding air treatment, and I'll get to that in just 1 second. But then also we've got a coalescing filter of the 0.01 milligrams per cubic meter inline coalescing filter. So by that standard, at face value, what we're looking at is a classification of a 8573151, just like we talked about earlier. But to kind of go back to the refrigerated air dryer, if performing is published, what I want to take this moment to do is just kind of share with you the idea that dryers perform based on three factors that have to be present. Every dryer, for the most part, is rated based on what we call the rule of 100s. And the rule of 100 simply states that a dryer will perform to its published data if the dryer is experiencing, or if the dryer has a 100 degree F approach temperature, 100 degree F ambient temperature, and 100 PSI approach pressure. Now that's critical because with the changing of any one of those three factors, the pressure dew point changes exponentially. There's correction factors that have to be taken into consideration when sizing a dryer so that you can achieve that certain dew point. If you don't take those factors into consideration and you stick a dryer in a position where the ambient temperature is consistently exceeding 100 degrees ambient, the dryer is not going to hit the dew point that you probably purchased it for. Or if the pressure approaching the compressor is greater than 100 PSI, then the dew point is not going to be what it is that it's publicized at. So it's very critical that we understand this as food manufacturers, because water in our airlines is the number one issue when it comes to, I don't want to say the number one, but it's a big part of when we start getting into viable microbial growth. And so we want to make sure that we understand that drying and suppressing the dew point, removing that water from the airline, is critical, and that we understand the equipment that's responsible for that is sized and ordered correctly. So anyways, getting back to this slide, 8573151 is what this company would look like, and again at face value. And so, is this good enough? Is this, you know, after you take an inventory of your compressed air system, is what you come to, what the conclusion you come to with regards to your air system right now, is that good enough? Next slide. The answer is up to you. It's one of those situations that organizations find themselves in where they have to be the designers of their SQF program. SQF simply wants you to put together a program, do what you say, implement the program, say what you do, and simply document how you are able to conclude that what you're implementing is resulting in the quality of air that you say you're wanting to achieve. And by proving that, it's through the air sampling. To answer the question of whether or not that's good enough, that's up to you. The standards have to be set internally with your Q&A, your QA department, because there is no real directive out there through SQF or the FDA. They don't give us actual numbers that they want us to achieve when it comes to classification of quality of air. Now, there are standards out there that exist. There are actual quantified standards, and it's brought to us by the BCAS, which is the British Compressed Air Society. And they very clearly and boldly state that for direct applications, direct contact applications, they recommend a class rating of 1-2-1. And so for indirect contact applications, a class rating of 1-4-1 is recommended. And so they come out and they actually give us a kind of a launching pad, if you would, or an idea or a profile of what does quality of air look like when it comes to the food industry with regards to direct contact and indirect contact. Next slide, please. So based on the current inventory and preliminary profile, it's time to establish your desired air quality standard and create an action slash compliance plan. And then next, to take the steps to achieve and maintain your company standard. What I have found with food companies is when we get to a point where we've identified what they've got and then also where they want to get to, what we find is that this is accomplished in two steps, and it's simply the implementation and the continuities process. Next step, next slide. So what we find is implementation and continuity. If you have these two areas of what I consider an action plan, when those two overlap and you have the right implementation and you have a continuity program in place, where those two overlap, we find a compliance program. We find a plan that helps us to push towards the certification or at least a plan that can be presented so that we can show what it is that we're going to do and then also to prove it. So next slide. The implementation portion of this plan, it starts with the equipment, compressors, filtration, dryers, drains, metering, dew point meters, hydrocarbon meters. The equipment is very necessary when you're looking at setting up your air system to provide a certain quality of air. And so we take a look at what it is, the air quality is that you're looking to achieve, and then identifying the type of equipment, if you don't already have it, to get there. The other part of the implementation part of this plan is the installation. A correct and strategic installation of equipment is critical when it comes to setting up a quality air system. There's many schools of thought, KGI, which is a Compressed Air and Gas Institute, but also the Compressed Air Challenge. There's several thoughts of or schools of thought when it comes to setting up a compressed air system, depending on what you have available to you or what you're capable of purchasing. For instance, there's a school of thought of a wet tank, drying system, and then a dry tank. I've seen a lot of systems that they're not capable of having the wet tank and the dry tank. And so there's some decisions that you as an organization have to make. But the correct and strategic installation of equipment is critical. After determining the type of equipment it takes to get there, installing it is critical. Next slide. The next segment of the compliance plan or action plan is the continuity service. So when we start looking at the continuity portion of the services is key. Predictive maintenance, preventative maintenance, scheduled maintenance, emergency, and that should be repair, not maintenance, but emergency repairs and emergency contingencies. Do you have a specific, do you have SOPs, do you have policies that clearly outline a predictive, preventative, and scheduled maintenance program for these this air system? If a compressed air system is left unattended too long, you have filters that become oversaturated, and now the oil carryover becomes greater than what it should be, and pretty soon you start having an excessively high oil content in your airline. The other one that I want to look at here is emergency contingencies. In the case of an emergency where you're bringing in rental air and you're tying into your system, are you tying in before the filtration system or are you tying in after the filtration system? Because once you bring a rental compressor in and it's not on food grade or it's not filtered or it's not dried and you blow it into your facility, you've just now contaminated and introduced into a quote-unquote SQF level or high quality of air system, a contamination source. And so that's something that when you start looking at building a continuity plan, you want to pay attention to. Monitoring, continuous scheduled and documented monitoring of the above services and steps to taken to provide the quality of air. Several monitoring systems are available to you. There's hydrocarbon testers. There's dew point monitors. A lot of dryers now come with dew point monitoring. But it's important that that's watched and monitored because, like I said earlier, dryers respond to outside factors such as the pressure, the temperature, approach temperature from the compressor, and the ambient temperature. So we want to make sure that the dryers are doing their job and supplying you with the dew point, the pressure dew point that you're looking for, in order to provide and keep your air at the quality that it's supposed to be. Number three is testing, standardized, continuous, and documented third-party testing of air. There are many labs out there that can provide this to you. They can train you to do it for yourselves, and then you send it back, and they can email the results to you. But what's great about that is not only do you get the results, but they keep the results. And so if you're ever audited, you have the availability to call upon those results and supply them because, again, it's all about proving it. Next slide. Again, I can't hit on this even more, but it's documentation, reports, results, and repairs. If it's not documented, it didn't happen. And this is true about this whole process, about implementing, you know, first of all, designing your air system and putting on paper what the quality of air you're looking for is. That's so important, documenting what is the quality of air you're looking for. And then to put a plan in place. How are we going to achieve it? How are we going to get there? What equipment? How are we going to install it? And then to document a maintenance program. What is it that we're going to do to keep this quality of air intact? How are we going to make sure that we can substantiate not only to our customers, but also to our internal QA, and then also to SQF or any outside monitoring or accredited auditing system that can come in and check the quality of air that you have? How do we support that? And it's all through documentation. And so, again, documentation of any kind of work orders, test results, and repairs is extremely necessary. Next slide, please. So that's the presentation in a nutshell. What we do typically is we work with companies all over, and we sit down and we go through and work with them on helping understand what their system looks like, helping them understand what's available to them. You know, as an organization, we help you define an air quality that you want to get to. We help you define the equipment that it's going to take to get there, and we assist you in making sure that it's strategically installed correctly. And then we provide some you know, outside sourcing for testing procedures and testing companies. But with that said, my time is running out. I thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out. It's a fascinating industry, and SQF is really there to protect us and to protect our customers. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Clinton, and I thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Phil. That was excellent. Our next speaker is Deepak Vital from Atlas Copco. Has a wealth of experience of over 15 years in the compressor industry, and he is going to be speaking about an ISO 22000 certification, and how you can apply it to food safety and compressed air. So with that, take it away, Deepak.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be here. Thank you all for your most valuable time. As we all know, that foodborne illness is the biggest challenge today. With every minute, the risk to the consumers and secondary risk to the industry is greater. Even a small incident in one company can have cascading effects on the whole community industry. Last week, I was reading the Food Safety magazine, where I saw the foodborne outbreaks have a huge economic impact. The foodborne illness is estimated to cost US more than $14 billion annually, according to a report of 2012 from Emerging Pathogens Institute. So, what can we do or contribute towards food industry efforts to provide a safe food? So today I'm going to share with you why is ISO 22000 food safety management certification so important for compressor manufacturer, and how we can contribute towards food safety initiatives. ISO food safety standard gives us confidence in products that we eat and drink. So next slide. Next. So I have a brief agenda, a short agenda, where we are going to start with understanding food and beverage industry as a compressed air provider. Then we'll also see the usage of compressed air in food industry, objective of ISO 22000 and its scope, and what are the types of safety hazards that needs to be addressed in order to eliminate all the safety hazards. Next slide. please. So let me tell you what we actually mean by food industry. It is an industry segment which uses methods and techniques and produces food for humans and animals from raw ingredients, or transform food into other type for consumption of humans or animals. Next slide. Compressed air has been a safe and reliable power source, and it is widely used in food industry and is also known as fourth utility next to electricity, water, and gas. Compressed air is used in various flows and pressures. We categorize into three: low, medium, and high, depending upon the application in food industry. The example for low pressure would be aeration. For medium pressure, it can be instrumentation. And for high pressure, like PET blowing or PET bottling. More than 90% of all processing companies use compressed air. So this industry is very important for us as a compressed air system provider. Next slide. So compressed air is typically used in various applications. I have listed few of them, like instrumentation, actuators, pneumatic conveying, sorting of products. In many of these applications, the compressed air comes or can come in contact with the product. Most of the applications generally use oil-free compressors to avoid any possible contaminant. Next slide, we'll talk about compressed air usage. Now, how do we differentiate between two specifications, that is contact and non-contact? Most of the companies use this in their specifications. Now, let us define what contact means. Contact means the process where compressed air is used as part of production and processing activity, including packaging and transportation, whereas non-contact means the process where compressed air is exhausted into local atmosphere during food preparation, production, packaging, or storage. We see that most of the companies nowadays are going for more strict one specification, which is contact air, so that they eliminate all the possible contaminants and safety hazards. We go to next slide. Until now, we talked about food industry and their compressed air usage. Now, let us look at ISO food safety management system. What is the objective of ISO 22000? ISO 22000 is a food safety management system that can be applied to any organization in the food chain, and we as compressed air equipment manufacturer are part of this. It is a certification that specifies a safety management system and is the requirement for any organization in contact or involved in food chain. Basically, the independent organization conducts the audit, and Atlas Copco has chosen to have Lloyd's Register to be the certifying company for its international presence. ISO 22000 is not defining the air quality as such. This is a very important point. However, it is important that we take care of this while selecting the compressed air equipment to eliminate any possible hazard. As we have seen in earlier slides, that food processing, the compressed air may come in contact with the product, so this air should not generate any risk of contamination. In this case, we use Class 0 certified oil-free compressors where you are safe. Next slide. So let's have a look at what and how food safety is described and handled in the standard. We will not go through the whole standard in this presentation. However, we will indicate the main points here and bring them in relation with compressed air system. The first point is, food safety is related to presence of foodborne hazards and more specific at the point of consumption. At certain stage, the food cannot be safe to consume. For example, raw meat or dairy product. But after correct processing, possible contaminants can be removed and food becomes safe to eat. Third, food safety is ensured through combined effort. This means that all parties in connection or in contact with food products and production are involved and responsible. The food chain is, as explained here, from feed and primary producers over to food manufacturers to retail and service shop, including companies that make equipments for food industry, packaging, cleaning products, additives, etc. In next slide, we will see the scope of ISO 22000. ISO 20000, to summarize, is an international standard that specifies the requirements for food safety management system. It combines the key elements ensuring food safety, and it is based on interactive communication, system management, and HACCP principle, which is Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point principle. This principle is very well known in food industry and pharmaceutical industry. Next slide, please. Now, the requirements for being certified as ISO 22000 are that there has to be a documented system to plan, implement, maintain, update a food safety management system. A system which ensures that product according to their intended use are safe for the consumer. We will now go a little more detail into three major food safety hazards, and what this means for compressed air and our products. The standard describes three food safety hazards, that is biological, chemical, and physical. These three are described as they could have negative effect when present on food safety. In other words, one should have a system and take sufficient measures to control and monitor these three types of hazards. Next slide, please. So what do we mean by hazards? Hazards are conditions of food which can cause illness, injury, or even death of a person. And the purpose of HACCP is to control these conditions and avoid that they occur. So next slide, we will go into detail about each of these hazards. Next slide, please. The first one is the biological hazards. Let's go a little more in detail of this hazard. What do they mean for us as compressed air equipment manufacturer? Biological hazards are those caused by microorganisms like bacteria, virus, parasites, and often associated with failure of a certain process step. We can state here that oil-free compressors are type which will not generate any biological hazard when used as intended and maintained as described in the manuals. Some of the biological contaminants are actually removed or reduced in quantity. In other words, the oil-free air compressors and certainly the eventually connecting a dryer, adsorption dryer with it, will have a sterilizing effect. However, we cannot claim that the compressed air is sterilized after passing through the high temperature in the compressor stages, because the time is too short to have full sterilization. Next slide. The second one is chemical hazard. These are substances or molecules that can be naturally present in the product, for example, from plants or animals, or intentionally added to the food during growth or during food processing. They could be considered safe at certain level, or could be dangerous above these levels. For example, pesticides. They also can contaminate the food accidentally. For example, the cleaning chemicals. They can cause some individuals to experience an immune system response, food allergens. Next slide, please. So what does this mean for a compressed air system product supplier or a system provider? The whole production process in the industry, compressor industry, and supply chain from our supplier, sub-supplier to our own assembly has been reviewed and adapted wherever required. All possible chemical products and use systems are checked. The conclusion of this thorough investigation and adaptation exercise is that there is no specific food safety risk identified. As such, the compressor and related drying equipment will not create any specific chemical hazard when used as intended. We go to the next slide. Next slide, please. The third one is the physical hazard. The third one is physical hazard. The third possible hazard. These are substances normally not found in food, but which can cause physical injury. For example, wood slivers, metal shavings. Now, when you compare the application to oil-free air compressors or any compressors or related dryers and filters, the equipment might release some particles from the inner components, but most of the time these particles are inert, and to safeguard the system, we can have filtration in place. We can refer to ISO 8573 class and install correct filtration system which can avoid these particles going to the system, compressed air system or air net. Next slide, please. So the most important is, why is ISO 22000 compliance of compressor manufacturers key to food industry? We believe that since ISO 22000 certification is key for food industry customers, it should be key for a compressor manufacturer, as compressed air plays a very important role in food manufacturing process. Also, working with certified suppliers gives customers peace of mind that the key piece of equipment was made in a clean and safe environment. And we can also contribute towards customers' ISO 22000 certification process. We can help them. And being ISO 22000 certified means that company has a food safety management system in place. As this standard demonstrates an organization ability to control food safety hazards. Next slide. Finally, we are proud to announce here to all of you that Atlas Copco is the first compressor manufacturer who was awarded ISO 22000 certification. And we are very happy that we are able to contribute towards efforts of food industry to provide us safe food. Thank you so much. So this ends my presentation. And if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. Thank you.
Cool. Okay. Thank you very much, Deepak, and excellent presentations from both. This is Rod Smith from Compressed Air Best Practices Magazine. A quick legal disclaimer here. The opinions expressed in these slides do not represent the positions of Compressed Air Best Practices, and I will emphasize that whether you have direct contact or indirect contact with food, every situation is unique and every plant has to come up with their own air quality specification because of so many factors that can arise. With that, I want to thank both the speakers, and I'm going to turn it over to Clinton, who will start processing some excellent questions that have come in from the audience.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much, Rod, and thank you to both of our speakers. We had a lot of great questions come in during the presentation, so I will try to get through them as efficiently as possible. If I don't get to do them by the end of the session, we will be sure to follow up via email. So a first question that came in for Phil. And Phil, if you just want to unmute yourself there. If there are no real standards, how do we as a company proceed with creating a standard?
When I'm working with companies that don't have an idea of where they want to start or where they want to go, given the fact that there aren't any real standards. What we do is I always like to bring in the BCAS and just kind of talk about that a little bit. And we've got to remember that we're in the industry of food. People are going to eat what we're making, and people are going to eat stuff from packages that we are making. And so we always have to keep in mind that the safety of the consumer is key. But then also we have to look at, you know, when I'm working with companies, we look at the vision and the mission of the company, and typically it always lends itself to the highest quality of, and then it goes on to talk about, or also to provide the highest quality or highest level. And so when looking at that, then we can start looking at, you know, what is it, what truly do you want your company to produce? And when it's all said and done at the end of the day, how can we achieve what you as an organization are trying to achieve with your overall product, and not just in the quality of air, but the quality of air definitely lends itself to the end product. And so that's how we start talking about the individual standards. And like Rod said, the standards that companies set are specific to themselves, and it's very critical that each company establish that standard for themselves and create that sense of position when it comes to air quality pertaining to their process.
All right, excellent. Our next question Deepak. And Deepak, does ISO 22000 describe a certain quality of food, or more specifically, a quality of compressed air?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Thank you. No, it doesn't describe quality of compressed air, because ISO 22000 is a quality management system certification, which requires proven procedure to guarantee that the product manufacturer does not create risk for food safety. As such, no limits of any contaminant is described in the standard. The manufacturer has to demonstrate that the product or equipment and processes applied are controlled and does not create any food safety risk.
All right, excellent. Thank you. Now we have a couple here for Phil that came streaming in during his presentation. And the first one here is from Chuck Westerheffen. And Chuck asked, is food grade oil defined, or is that up to the oil manufacturer to define?
Hi, Chuck. Well, food grade lubricants are broken up into basically three classifications, H1, H2, and H3. And when we're looking at a food grade lubricant, a food grade oil, the additives and base stocks are basically given, I believe it's like CFR 178, 3750, I believe is what it is. But basically it's defined outside of it by, I want to say, the USDA. They took a look at the industry and the equipment used and determined that there needed to be a classification of food grade lubricants. And again, it's an H1, H2, and H3, and each one of those carries a specific property that allows them to be used in specific areas of the food packaging and food processing industry. I hope that helps.
Okay, excellent. And this second one here. Let me mute Phil real quick. Okay, the second question here again is for Phil, and it's in regards to BCAS guideline 102, which states that a product contact should. Let me find that one real quick. Okay, so BCAS guideline 102 states product contact should be 221, quality class 221. Which one is correct, 121 or 221?
Unmuted. Okay, so Steve, what I'm talking or what I'm speaking from is the BCAS. It's the code of practice for food grade compressed air. So the 102, I need to look at that a little closer, but for the most part, when I was reviewing this and reviewing for meetings with my customers that are in the the food processing and food packaging. We specifically, you know, we derived our, I guess, information, and we pulled that from the BCAS Code of Practice 6 and used the 1.1. So to answer your question, I am not 100% clear on which one, because the direct contact, I don't know how clearly that is stated with regards to food, whereas the Code 6 clearly calls out the air purity for contact and for non-contact, and then also for with regards to high-risk contact, which would be food packaging and food that's like a ready-to-eat style packaging. So I hope that helps. Hope that helps and answers your question.
All right, great. Thanks, Phil. And Steve, those guidelines can be purchased at the BCAS website. If you need any additional information, feel free to contact us. Moving on to our next question, and this one's from Josh Wilms. And I will ask Deepak about this one. Deepak, what about microbial filtration and testing in addition to the ISO 8573 parameters? And feel free to let Phil jump in on that one as well.
Actually, I'm not sure about I will not be able to explain the filtration here for bacteria. Maybe Phil can help me out on this.
Okay, and Phil, Rod actually has something to say.
Oh, go ahead.
So bacterial removal, microbial specifications would fall under quality class zero, which is customer specified for particulate matter or vapor. So this is really where the factory is driving the specification, and you would have to come up with that number yourself, and that's what class zero is for. It's customer specified and better than the numbers you see there. And that's where you get together with your, you know, the sterile filter manufacturers and those folks to find out which grades they're looking at. On dew point, you know, if you know, you do need a desiccant dryer, you need a quality class 3, 2, or 1, or 0. You cannot use a refrigerated dryer if you have concerns, if you want to ensure there is no potential for biological growth. So, hope that helps.
All right, thanks, Rod. Deepak, real quick, we had an audience member ask if, you know, since Atlas Copco was the first to get the certificate from ISO, have any other makers been certified? And does that standard also apply to air dryers or only compressor manufacturers?
Yeah, as far as we know, we are the first one to be certified for ISO 22000. But yes, this can be applied to any industry who is involved in the food chain. Any organization who is involved in the food chain, even the dryer manufacturer can go for it. Whoever wishes to implement this system consistently to provide safe food, can go for it. So they can follow the system, they can follow the process and get certified.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Deepak. Phil, here's another one that would be great to hear your feedback on, and I think Rod has something to say as well. And this one's from Matt Wellington. He says that piping was not mentioned with the quality air. For a company wanting to improve air quality, how would it look if they had years of oil, scale, and rust in their piping system? Do you see a major difference in air quality between aluminum compressor piping and black iron in a properly performing system? And let me get your mute. There you go, Phil.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Sorry about that.
Okay. Yes, we can. Okay, great. Good. No problem. You know, I'll say that the movement of aluminum pipe in the industry for about the last, I would say, 10 to 12 years has been pretty strong. And over the last 12 years, I would say, I've seen more and more put in. given that, I have not seen a lot of corrosion and a lot of displacement of any particulates coming out of aluminum, extruded aluminum piping, whereas I have seen what a black pipe or you know, what that looks like after so much time of you know, constant water and oil breaking down the inside. So to answer your question, I mean, it definitely is more beneficial from my experience and from what I've seen in the industry to go with an aluminum pipe. There's many reasons and benefits of aluminum pipe over black that we see coming out in the industry, but I've seen, you know, definitely a difference in quality of air with regards to rust and scale and buildup. Rod?
Yeah, what I would add to that, this is Rod Smith, is if you have an old piping system, and not to complicate matters further, but there is, I have to check the BCAS guidelines. I know on the in Germany they have a VDMA guideline where they quite correctly talk about if you have old piping systems that have deteriorated, then you need to move towards decentralized air treatment, meaning your particulate, your oil filtration, and your, you know, have to be in front of the point of uses. You cannot, if you have new piping where you don't have any contamination, then you can have centralized air treatment. So that's a very good question, where your piping system is going to have a big impact upon your air treatment strategy. So you have to understand the state of your piping system to determine whether or not you need decentralized air treatment versus centralized.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Rod. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our allotted time. We had a lot more great questions come streaming in during the discussion, but we're going to have to go ahead and answer you via email later on. I just want to thank everyone again for joining us today, especially our speakers, Phil and Deepak. I think they did a wonderful job. And I'd like to encourage you as you leave to take a brief survey as you leave the session. Again, our slides and a recording of this webinar will be made available to you after the session. And be sure to grab a free subscription to the magazine and our new publications on www.airbestpractices.com. I hope everyone has a great rest of the afternoon, and thanks again.